Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan at 7:31. Sandy Clough with you. And we'll get back on the phones in a few moments. 303-228-1043 with lines available. It's always a pleasure to welcome our good friend Andrew Feinstein from DenverStiffs.com, the preeminent Nugget blog. And today, reaction, as you might expect, to the LeBron James announcement last night. Both from just a general basketball observer's point of view, but also some analysis by Andrew of what this might mean for the Nuggets. My friend, good evening. How are you?
Hello, my friend. It's good to hear from you.
I just got back from
the World Cup, so I was exhausted on a time zone shift, and now all of a sudden I got hit with this LeBron train, so I'm getting back into basketball quickly.
So you missed most of the LeBron-a-thon that unfolded over the last, the last few weeks. You were out of town.
I was able to check in online from overseas, but I missed a lot of it, and I think I'm glad I missed a lot of it.
your reaction very much in keeping with most of what was expressed today, locally, nationally. Your take, you saw all of this last night, correct?
Oh, of course.
The full hour plus.
I was late to dinner because of it.
Right. What was your feeling as a basketball fan as you watched all of this? Just your gut visceral feeling about what you were watching.
My gut visceral feeling was that this is bad for the NBA.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I might be too rooted in 1980s McNichols Arena basketball. And I think it clouds my vision in a lot of ways of what modern sports has become. But I don't like seeing two superstars and an all-star essentially colluding to be on one team. I don't like the fact that as a season ticket payer, now there's two more dud games on the schedule this year that we have to pay for. And I don't like it. I think that competitive imbalance might be too strong of a term, but I like the fact that, Chris Bosh gave me a reason to watch the Raptors, and LeBron gave me a reason to watch the Cavaliers, and Dwayne Wade gave me a reason to watch the Heat. Now they're all on one team, and it's going to be very difficult to root for.
My reaction in the days leading up to it was probably conditioned more by what I was hearing from people who were either friendly or professionally associated rather closely with LeBron. One was the author Buzz Bissinger, who said he thought LeBron, in the days leading up to the announcement, had handled the whole thing terribly, and went on to say, this is not the young man I worked with. The young man I worked with had different values. This is a different person I'm watching now. Maybe I got taken when I was working with him on his biography. Just a year ago. Maybe I got taken. Maybe this is the real LeBron. But that book was not about LeBron because LeBron didn't want to make the book just about him. He wanted the book to be about all those who had influenced him in his upbringing, were still with him, who had been around him in Cleveland, and the art of presumption, you would assume that he thought those people had been well-treated. They continued to be around him. They had been well-treated by the Cleveland Cavaliers, that the Cavaliers hadn't stepped in and said, no, you have to get rid of all these people you've grown up with. Today, I'm reading Bissinger's reaction last night to the television program, and he's calling it the TV equivalent of waterboarding. A New York Post columnist, Mike Vaccaro, calls it an awful night for Cleveland, worst night for sports, worst night for ESPN, and the executive producer and head writer of The Late Show with David Letterman on Twitter says, I'm keeping my two-year-old up to watch the LeBron James special. I want her to see the exact moment our society hit rock bottom. So your reaction is certainly not unique. And Yet the cross currents, I think, confuse a lot of people. They ask, well, how can something so highly rated be bad for the sport? And my answer right before we brought you on was, well, if more people watch LeBron James in what seemed to be a very uncomfortable position, looking bad last night, but more people saw him do that than saw him play in any one particular game during the playoffs this year, that's bad for your sport. Because he's good at basketball. He's very bad at what he did last night. Whatever you want to call last night's program, he came off, almost everybody believes, quite badly. Almost everybody believes that even at his worst, he generally comes across pretty well on the court.
I don't know. I'm glad he came off badly because he's a jerk, and I'll use nice words since we're on the public airwaves here. But he deserves to come off badly. He has every right to choose to play anywhere he wants to play, but to do it in this manner,
right?
He deserves to look as bad as possible. I actually thought that this started. If you remember his post-game press conferences after he took a dive in, what was it, games 5 and 6 against the Celtics just
right.
a few months ago.
Yeah,
they were awful.
His
post-game press
game
conferences
five.
Were so awful. He showed no emotion. It was as if he just didn't care. And it was at that point I was like, you know, I don't know if this guy gets it. I wrote a column. The headline, I think, was Coddled, Spoiled, and Ringless. And I was basically talking about how LeBron James and Bosh, and I threw Melo in there too. You know, they come from this generation of a little too much too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Comparatively, Dwayne Wade's had to actually earn a lot of the success that he's gotten. And I think that LeBron came across as the spoiled, rotten brat that he is, and I'm glad he looks bad. He should look bad.
Your disposition on how this affects Carmelo's future here in Denver, does it solidify his future here? Does it make it inevitable that he will sign this contract extension offer? Or does it somehow work the other way?
Well, it's interesting. I know I kind of took both sides of the argument in my column this morning, but I think you have to because Carmelo's got a very interesting conundrum on his hands. Because of the lockout, which is bad for us as basketball fans, but might be great for the NBA in the long run, this is the only shot Carmelo has at that $65 million 3-year deal. He has to sign that deal between now and the expiration of that bargaining agreement. If he doesn't, he could cost himself, according to Chris Thomason at Fanhouse, Chris was telling me that it could cost Carmelo upwards of $35 million
right.
over the course of the contract. Now, that's a lot of money. Carmelo Anthony doesn't have Shaq money or LeBron money or Michael Jordan money. He just doesn't. And that's a big issue for him. So do I think if the system stayed as is, I think Carmelo would be as good as gone. But given that this is his only shot to potentially pocket an extra $35 million, this might actually work in the Nuggets' favor.
I agree with you on that. The first call out of the chute tonight we get is from someone, and I can understand why people are reacting this way. But he's looking ahead a year and saying, I could envision Amari Stoudemire in the role of Dwayne Wade bringing not only Carmelo but Chris Paul to New York. And as much as you might argue that Stoudemire isn't Wade, that the Knicks are led by an owner who's utterly clueless, the most incompetent owner in major professional sports today, even more so than Donald Sterling out in Los Angeles with the Clippers, and that there are rumors now that I hear on a fairly regular basis that Donnie Walsh either will retire immediately, which he denies, or that within the next year, maybe there would be a point at which Donnie would just say, hey, my best laid plans did not work out. I've tried my best. It's time for somebody else to take a shot. And that the NBA owners will never allow this sort of scenario to take place again. Hey, I guess you can't rule anything out as absolutely impossible. There's still going to be that sense on the part of Nugget fans that by hook or by crook, Carmelo's going to end up being wooed by the Knicks or leaving to play in New York?
Well, Melo could gamble if he wants to.
But it would be a gamble. That's the important point, right?
If you could confirm this for me, he doesn't have to sign this contract right away. I think
he can sign it
any time between now and the end of next June.
Right.
And
the only leverage the Nuggets have.
Read the tea leaves with his agent and see where this collective bargaining agreement's heading. Because if it's only going to cost him $10 million, he might just wait. And I think Carmelo's been great for Denver basketball. I know I get heat sometimes for being too critical of him. I don't deny the fact that Carmelo Anthony is the difference between the lottery and making the playoffs seven straight years. And while I do think all the money these guys get paid is obnoxious and absurd, if you're going to give a guy max money, Carmelo Anthony certainly deserves it more than Amari Stoudemire or Joe Johnson
does.
Right. But if I'm Carmelo Anthony, I would try to keep my options open as long as possible. I think New York would be very intriguing. I think he'd like to be there, just from what I hear. I think Lala would like to be there. I mean, they're having VH1 televise their wedding, for the love of God. So
sure.
I think, you know, New York's a place that they would really like to be. And, you know, playing for Mike D'Antoni, he could average 35 points a game in the biggest media market in the world, and I think that would be very appealing. But the Nuggets might be in a unique situation where they can pay them a heck of a lot more money.
Right, right. And, again, the Nuggets only have as leverage the ability to trade them.
I was going to lose Carmelo, I would trade him now. But
the
Knicks have nothing to give you. I mean, David Lee just walked out the door last night. So the Knicks have absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing to give you. And I think, by the way, Donnie Walsh, I have the utmost respect for Donnie Walsh. He's a gentleman. He's been great for the sport. He has Denver ties. I think he's done a horrible job in New York. He's blown draft picks. He's traded away future draft picks. I know he inherited an awful situation, but he has not made New York an appealing place for people to go. And I think that part of the problem with this whole LeBron spectacle that isn't talked about enough is the fact that five franchises basically threw away two seasons to maneuver themselves to be here. And that hurts two groups. That not only hurts the fans in those five cities, but it hurts fans like us in Denver who pay for tickets because those are five more bad games on the schedule that we have to pay for.
What is the best way to guess regarding the Nuggets at this point and their prospects for next year? They've been on the outside looking in, certainly when it came to the draft, in spite of statements following the end of the draft that they had tried very hard, nothing happened. Now they sit back and see if there are any deals to make in the next few weeks. We know now a little more about Kenyon Martin and Birdman, that it is almost impossible to envision either of them being ready at the start of the season. Martin may be out for not just days or weeks, but months at the beginning of the season. You're a Nugget fan, too. What's your sense of their prospects going into 2010-2011?
Well, let me give you a little positive spin since
I've
been too negative
on
this call, and then I'll give you the negative spin. The Nuggets got two gifts this week. Amari Stoudemire going to New York and Carlos Boozer going to Chicago were two gifts. That automatically, in my opinion, makes Phoenix and Utah most likely will be worse than Denver,
record-wise.
And also, it hit me today. You know, at the end of the day, the Nuggets did win 53 games.
Right.
And prior to George Karl getting sick and Kenyon Martin getting hurt, we were in the running as one of the two or three teams that were going to fight the Lakers down the stretch. So,
correct.
You know, at the end of the day, we can't be that far removed. And yet, it's, for some reason, that Utah series makes us all feel like we have nothing here. All that said, I agree with you. When you hear things like no timetable for return, to me that means all-star break for Kenyon Martin and
I agree.
Chris Anderson.
That's what I've heard,
he has
too.
No money to sign a big man.
Yeah.
And if you're a big man and you're going to take a discount, you're probably more apt to take it in Boston like Jermaine O'Neal just did, or you go play in Miami and ride that gravy train. So the prospects are tough. They may have to go small ball, kind of like the Suns did last year, and hope for the best. But given that those two big names are shipped east, maybe the Nuggets are can kind of retain their spot as the fifth or sixth best team in the Western Conference.
All right. On that happy note, or happier note, We will conclude the conversation for this evening. Andrew, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
We'll talk to you soon.
And I hope you're enjoying your summer, and I appreciate you talking NBA in the offseason.
Thanks. We'll talk soon. You know, to be honest, there's nothing really to talk about otherwise. I mean, this is a huge story. Whether you like the way it's played out or not, whether you're sickened by the excesses or not, it really is on many levels a revealing story. And it may be revealing in the sense that it is marking some kind of downturn in NBA history. But we'll talk about that and other subjects. 303-228-1043. Our thanks to Andrew Feinstein from DenverStiffs.com. If you're looking for some of the best commentary on the Nuggets, timely, incisive commentary, that's where you go. And the fans who respond with various postings are among the most sophisticated of Nugget fans, too. It's fascinating to read, to get a sense of the public feeling about where things are going in basketball generally and with the Nuggets in particular. This is Cleft Talk. Stay with us on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.